The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, we're joined today by the author of a new book on Sean Kelly, Stephen Roach and Irish cycling's golden generation. Paul Kimmage is even in there as well. The book is called The Ascent and it's written by Barry Ryan, who is European editor at Cycling News. Thank you very much, Barry, for joining us.
Thanks, Matt.
What's got you so interested in going back to that era of the late 1980s in particular, going into the early 1990s?
Well, I suppose in terms of the timing, it's 30 years since Stephen Roach's triple crown of the Tour de France, Giro d'Italia and World Championships.
So you're making me feel very old now, because I remember that so well from the time. But yeah, 30 years, right.
But I think more specifically, I guess, you know, in recent years I've looked at, I mean, I work in cycling, I'm a journalist with Cycling News, and a lot of, particularly around the time of Lance Armstrong's demise, a lot of the main players in cycling were actually from Ireland who had been on the scene during the, you know, what we call the golden era of the 1980s. So you had Pat McQuaid from Glasnevin was UCI president, Paul Kimmage was his staunchest critic, David Walsh from Kilkenny was the man being fated for bringing down Lance Armstrong. Sean Kelly was the most popular commentator on, you know, a channel that launched itself as the home of cycling. And Stephen Roach's son and nephew were Ireland's two best cyclists. So
that's Nicholas Roach and Dan Martin.
Yes, yeah. So all of these guys were still, you know, in and around the kind of the centre of the sport all these years later. And I found that kind of an interesting way of looking at it.
But it's a sport that seems so deeply tarnished now because of all the revelations of drug taking, you know, various victories been erased from the Roll of Honour. Is there still that, still in retrospect, still that love for Irish cycling of the past, given that now maybe people are wondering, was it tainted too?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's complex. And in cycling in particular, this whole idea of kind of legacy and erasing people from the record books is especially difficult, because if you look at, you know, the kind of the consensus greatest bike rider of all time would be considered to be Eddie Merckx. But, you know, Eddie Merckx tested positive three times, but nobody ever, you know, suggests
didn't even know that.
Yes, you know, nobody ever really suggests that, oh, we should consider somebody else.
Heather, how far back was that? What was he testing positive for?
It's on the late 60s, early 70s, you know, stimulants for the most part. But, you know, there isn't a kind of demonstrably clean alternative to Eddie Merckx, you know, and if you go through various generations of cycling history, you know, finding a champion or, you know, a tour winner who hasn't got some link to doping is incredibly difficult.
Does that suggest they were all at it?
I mean,
it almost equalised things out, that if you didn't take it, you might lose. But if you did win, it's because you were just taking much the same stuff as everyone else was.
Well, I mean, the way I'd look at it, certainly in terms of the 1980s and 1990s, the culture was sort of, it wasn't so much that you decided to opt into doping, more so that you had to decide to opt out. And I think, you know,
and if you opted out, you were likely to lose your ride.
Yes, yeah. And I mean, I think that, again, this is, I would say when I was sitting down to write the book, I tried to be play as straight as bad as possible. And essentially, I mean, it would be ridiculous to write a book about Kelly and Roach and not talk about doping. But at the same time, it would probably be a little bit disingenuous to start grandstanding and pretending, you know, in the manner of Captain Reno and Casablanca, that I was shocked by, you know, the fact that doping was part of their careers.
Okay, but if they were Americans or French cyclists, would we give them as free a pass as perhaps we give them in Ireland?
Probably not, but I think a part of the issue, and if I mean, I guess the obvious comparison to make would be with somebody like Michelle Smith, who has been, you know, discredited since, even though she still has her Olympic medals, but, you know, because of what happened.
It's one of these strange ironies, and I think this came up recently when Jimmy McGee's death as well, because he always championed her, regarded as Ireland's greatest ever Olympian because she had those medals. And yet you put together lists of Ireland's greatest ever athlete and a woman who has kept her medals, but because she was subsequently banned for 4 years, everyone leaves her off the list.
Yeah, I mean, I would think if we're comparing Kelly and Roach with that, I guess their fortune in a way was that, you know, the association with doping in the public mind didn't arrive until after their careers had finished. And also, if you go back to the 1980s, attitudes of both the press and the public to doping were very different to what they are now. You know, for instance, Sean Kelly tested positive twice during his career. But when you go back through the archives of Irish newspapers in the 1980s, or French or Italian newspapers for that matter, I mean, it's referred to, but it's not, you know, it's not dominating column inches in the same way it would be now. it's again, it seems almost a kind of a cultural thing, I guess, in not just in cycling, but in all professional sports.
But could it be even for Ireland? We don't want to believe that any of our sports stars could actually have cheated and used the drugs to get to the very top.
I think every country has that problem. We see that, you know, right now with, you know, if we look across at, you know, there have been various allegations concerning Team Sky in Britain, and, you know, there are plenty of people there who don't want to hear it. I don't think that's...
And particularly when you try and bring it up
with
them.
Well, that's another issue. But I mean, you know, I don't think it's a uniquely Irish problem. But I think, you know, if we go... I think there have been kind of certain maybe landmark moments in sport history where people have begun to pay closer heed to doping. I guess, you know, Ben Johnson in 88 was kind of the big moment. Then for cycling, the big moment was 1998 and the Festina affair. And that was kind of the line in the sand where people started looking more closely at the issue of doping.
Indeed. But I suppose now we have another golden generation of cycling. You referred to Nicholas Roach and Dan Martin, perhaps not quite at the level that Sean Kelly and Stephen Roach were 30 years ago. But it seems there isn't the same interest, despite the fact that the roads are full of people who've taken up cycling for leisure cycling. That wouldn't have been the case 30 years ago. And yet there doesn't seem to be the same interest in the performance of the Irish athletes in the professional sport.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there are a few different ways of looking at that. I mean, for one thing, I guess I would look at the fact that so many people are out on the road actually cycling is probably healthier than the situation in the 1980s, where there was a bit of a bandwagon built up, but people weren't actually really getting out on their bikes. And
nobody could afford the bikes in those days. It was part of the issue as well.
That's true, yeah. Also, I suppose, you know, if you go back to the 1980s as well, there weren't that many Irish sports people at that kind of very high international level. It was the beginning of kind of a period where you looked at other sports like Barry McGuigan and Eamon Cocton, and people were...
Yeah, the footballers since they got to the European Championships in 1988, yes, weren't really doing it.
Yes, whereas now, you know, I guess nowadays there are, you know, across all sorts of sports, you know, there are Irish athletes competing and to varying degrees of success on the international stage, which wouldn't have been the case, I suppose, in the 1980s. So obviously when you had two of the best bike riders in the world, they were going to draw the eye in a way that maybe Dan Martin and Nicholas Roach haven't quite managed.
So for this book, how cooperative are people? How willing are the likes of Sean Kelly, Stephen Roach and these people to talk now of their past?
Well, it depends on what you mean by past, I guess. I mean, they're very willing to sit down and speak and talk about their careers, obviously.
But do they bridle at the issue of drugs when brought up?
They react in different ways, and the ways they reacted to me were actually in keeping with the way they have reacted generally to the accusations of doping. That is, when I sat down with Stephen Roach, he really seemed to be trying to convince me that he was clean, and he, you know, he wanted to answer the questions and wanted to, you know, because it was funny when I was talking to him about things like, you know, he's touring in 87. You could almost feel him flipping into autopilot because he'd told the story so many times before, and I was trying to kind of direct him away to talk about different things. But when it came to doping, he was, you know, very fully engaged, very keen to make me believe, even if there was a part from that accepted that, you know, I wasn't exactly buying what he had to say.
Well, he has a legacy to defend.
Yes, yes. I mean, and Kelly, his attitude was more that he basically didn't really want to talk about it at all, and kind of, you know, I almost felt embarrassed by being asked the questions. He wasn't really trying to convince me either way. He just would have preferred not to speak. And in both ways, this is, as you pointed out, both of these guys defending their legacies in their own way.
Of course, the other man who was there at the time was Paul Kimmage, and he did his magnificent book Rough Ride back just around the time when he actually retired. And I'm sure Paul won't mind me asking this question because he's a regular in this programme and I really enjoy his company. But what does everyone else in the cycling fraternity make of Paul Kimmage now?
It depends on who you speak to, I guess. But I mean, there were some interesting people I interviewed. I mean, for instance, Patrick Valk, who would have been Stephen Roach's great confidant during his professional career. He started off as his mechanic and later became a team manager. Now they fell out subsequently, which happened to quite a lot of Roach's close acquaintances during his career. But, you know, it was interesting. He spoke about when Rough Ride came out, and obviously Stephen Roach was very critical of Rough Ride. Valk kind of kept his counsel, but he, you know, he told me that if he had to describe Kimmage in two words, it would be, you know, correct and right and brave, you know, but he didn't agree with the way Roach went after him publicly. But then whether Valk actually said that to Kimmage at the time. I don't think he did.
And now what do people actually think? Because Paul has been involved in campaigning and I think in many respects may have been the most important journalist in actually highlighting drugs in sport, and then had the likes of Pat McQuaid going after him because of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are still people who you know, don't want to hear what Paul has to say. But I think there are plenty more people who, after 1998 or after Operación Puerto in 2006 or after Armstrong's downfall in 2012, you know, have finally and belatedly come to accept that, you know, what he was saying all along was absolutely correct. Even Stephen Roach, though, you know, he and Kimmage aren't on speaking terms, will at least acknowledge now that, you know, in his own way, that, you know, what Kimmage was writing was correct. The great shame, of course, is that he, you know, threw him under the bus in 1990.
Well, isn't that, just to finish, Barry Ryan, isn't that always one of the great shames of The Ascent, your book, is that so many of these people actually did end up at loggerheads with each other, that sort of the community which had been built up as they all became stars at the same time, Irish icons, that so much of the stuff because of the drug taking did fracture relationships.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's as much as anything, you know, it's not so much just, obviously you write about the events and the great victories, but it's, you know, it's really, I guess, a story of young men who were kind of following a certain dream, and they all had, you know, various decisions to make, and over time, based on the decisions they took, you know, they began to grow apart, I suppose.
The Ascent is the book. Barry Ryan, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
Thanks, man.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.